Okay. Today is Sunday, May 29th, 2016. It's our last shiur for this Zaman in the Sunday class. We have two more classes left on Monday, Be'ezrat Hashem. I want to dedicate today's shiur to the memory of a wonderful lady, Zelda Bat Brina Solsky. Am I pronouncing it right? And this lady, I was told, grew up not in Cape Town and not in Johannesburg, but in a favafina part of South Africa, and was always a Shomer Torah mitzvah, came in Aliyah decades ago, all her children here, and engaged in fabulous deeds of being Makarevet, people studying to become Jewish. It's her first Yahrzeit now, and let's dedicate the shiur in her memory. Schut, Israel attracts the finest Jews in the world, period. And she was one of them. Michael, I ask you again, did you talk with Charlie Weinberg's daughter?
She hasn't been in class. She's been in America or traveling.
Do me a favor, don't forget and then get in touch with me. Pass that to Charlie. It's very important. People are asking me. I just want to comment, on two, past Shayurim. First of all, going back a number of years already.
I haven't seen her in weeks.
Okay, so make an effort to see what's happening and see if you can reach her for me. People, we've spoken about the era for two full years, and a lot is happening. So in Crown Heights today, there's a machloket. So there's a Lubavitcher Chassid, a dear student of mine, a Talmud Chacham from a fabulous family, and he's very upset with what's happening. So I just want to tell him that if you go back to my lectures, you recall I explained the Rebbe's position, and I know the Rebbe's position, and it's not for me to paskin or to take sides. I live in Yerushalayim, but all I'm saying, and I'm repeating what I said in the 1960s, when Rabbi Tendler built an Erev in Muncie, Mela, Rabbi Moshe was Matia. How many people heard of Muncie? Muncie is off the beaten path. Muncie then was an outpost. I didn't say a word. I was a Rebbe in YU as a Rosh Yeshiva. Kids are telling me Muncie as an Erev. Then when they built an Erev in Kew Gardens Hills, Rothkopf said, gentlemen, I predict within 50, 60 years, there will not be a Kehillah in America without an Erev. Of course, Kew Gardens Hills is already in the mainstream. This is Queens. There were arguing in Manhattan. Then you know what happened already, Kew Gardens Hills, Manhattan, Brooklyn, now in Crown Heights, Manchester, London, all over the world. And all over the world is machlokes. It is insoluble. But I repeat again, if you're a Litvak, you have to say, being Machmir, the Mishkan Ot Yaakov, but you have to understand it's a Chumrah. If you're a Polish Yid or an Ungarish Yid, a Polish Yid, you can say, I'm Samachan, the Erev, the Beit Ephraim. If you're an Ungarisha and you're not Samachan, the Erev, you are an Apikairis to the second power. And that's the Chatam Sofer, that's Rabbi Menashe Klein. So my friend and my dear student in Crown Heights said the Satmar Ruf was against the Erev. I don't know if the Satmar Ruf was against the Erev. Besofa Shel Davar, they say his Av Beit in Rabbi Yisachar Katz, who just passed away, was Machshir the Erev in Borough Park. So I'm not certain. But Ein Hachinami, I have many problems with the Satmar Ruf. So then you found he was, if Yitaka was not Samachan the Chatam Sofer, so added to the list of problems. Okay, by the way, you know that. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, it wasn't so much as Chumrah, it was more like Rabbi Teitz. You have to hear my lectures, because ultimately in Melbourne they have an Erev. Now, then I also want to mention my dear student, the Rabbi Grunstein. So when we spoke about in this very tshuva, whether you can count a woman, an Eved Kanani, a cotton for the tent. So, you know, the whole question, then we went into the Rav Shulchan Aruch and counting a cotton. and the whole concept of a katan, holding a chumash, a sefer Torah. So I remember I said to you that the Rebbe once gave an unbelievable yotzei drasha, where he spoke about a human being being like a sefer Torah. And he explained that ultimately when you count a kid as number 10, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam you're counting. It's the Aron Kodesh you're counting. So my Talmud, Rabbi Grunstein, brought me some proofs to this. And those are I'm just saying, I don't have time to go into it, but those are the proofs that the Rav actually said in that drasha. For instance, when a person, homeid aliyach hameid, it's an open Gemara, you're chayef kriya. By the way, it's an interesting shayla. If you're a doctor or a nurse and you're working in a hospital where lo aleinu, people are dying every day. By the way, the Lubavitcher Rebbe would not call it a Beit Cholim. He called it a Beit Refuah. Mashahu kazeh. He had tremendous insight. So what do you do about Kriya? It's an interesting Shaila. There are Shuvah, but I'm just throwing it out. The Shaila is more important than the answer. So I agree with Rabbi Grunstein. Okay, I'm ready to roll. I have a lot to do in Shai. I'll come in a second to what your comments. We're finishing up with Shuvah. I have some wonderful guests here that I also go back quite a long time with already. And I just want to mention, we're finishing up the tribute. You're probably even following via the internet. And it's fascinating. Reb Menashe Klein, who's from Gadasha, a survivor of the Holocaust, Bucky and Shas and Paiskim, photographic memory, the rabbi and best friend of Eli Wiesel. So he's answering Dov Frimmer, why you product on feminism. So he went into the whole question that, of course, a woman shouldn't feel second rate. Everything we spoke about when it comes to Tzelem Elokim, a man and woman are equal. A woman is even more important than a man. A man gets the name of the bank account, the Veit Avotam, but the woman gives Yiddishkeit. If the kid's mother is not Jewish, the kid can have a father who knows Shas by heart and is a chassid, and he can daven three times a day, but is a and I know cases like this, by the way. If the wife is not Jewish, the kid is not Jewish. After the Holocaust, lo aleinu, hundreds, thousands married the people who saved them. And you have already, I dealt with this when I dealt with Geirut, where you had people who later in life come back to being Hasidim and Anshei Maisa, and their wives are not Jewish. They're married because their wives saved them. Knew what bigger tzaddik it is there than a wife who saves your life. So it's food for thought, but boy, Reb Menashe Klein is absolutely right, and I've said this 100 times over on my own with some of my students who keep their maiden name. I said, why are you keeping your maiden name? I consider it an Issa D'Oraita, Levet Avotam, for physical identity, tangible identity. We use the father's name. For religious identity, spiritual identity, it's all up to the mother. All right, then we went in, and this is what we spoke about last week. And we're making it very concise. It's a long chibur. We've spent already a nice few weeks on it. But when it comes to davening, so Reb Menashe Klein is diametrically opposed to Reb Heschel Schachter. My dear friend, my havruta, my colleague, my playmate, Reb Heschel feels that a woman has a chiyuv and she has to go to shul, she has to create a Torah, she has to tefillah b'tzibra, kedusha, kaddish, etc. Reb Menashe Klein feels exactly the opposite. The woman has no chiyuv whatsoever. And therefore, he advises a woman should daven in the house, not go to shul. He quotes the Tzavah of the Vilna Gaon. He claims to know the Behuda also left the Tzavah like that. I know the Vilna Gaon Tzavah by heart. That's absolutely correct. Keep your daughters home. And I have to say, I always laugh, because I've been davening Hashkama. You know, when I left America, I left the rabbinate in my first few months in Israel. Natan, you should know, I went to a different shul every Shabbos just to prove I'm a Ben Chorin. You understand? It was, I left the rabbin, and then I said, what are you, an idiot? Find the shul and find the minyan. Also, I wanted to master Kol HaTorah Kula. I told you, when I came in Aliyah, I saw right away there's no way I could make a living here, certainly at that time in Israel with the taxes, and I was on the books. So I said, idiot, if God put you in Israel, you have to master Kol HaTorah Kula. No, I never mastered, but you can't accuse me of not trying. So I found the 630 Minyanach Yashikayach Yashikayach. See, I did you a favor and you did me a favor. This is what you call Gungun. That's what the world is about. Ah, beautiful Yashikayach. I'll tell you what that's about. One of the talks they asked me to do in America is on Reb Yitzchak Kutner. So at first I said, gee, what do I want out of Reb Yitzchak Kutner? You know, I knew Reb Moshe, I know the Rebbe, I knew Rebecca a little bit, but well, Reb Yitzchak Kutner, true. I used to wait for him in 18 Berlin when he came to visit his first cousin, Reb Yehoshua, my dear friend and neighbor, Gadol B'Yisrael. So Reb Yehoshua would tell me, would call me and say, my cousin is coming, you want to meet him? Go downstairs, bring him up, and we'll schmooze a little. So I did meet him a few times and schmooze with him a few times. But I did, I'm in the middle of research on Reb Yitzchak Kutner, and I loved it. I just called America and said, you guys made me so happy. But I'm warning you in advance, at the end of his life, there were problems with Chaim Berlin, here, there. I said, that I'm not going to touch upon, because you give a talk, I want to be positive. I don't want to deal with the negativisms. There's enough positivism in his life. Also, I threw out a striptease on Friday. When I spoke about him in terms of Rav Soloveitchik. To compare him to the Rav is so fascinating. What happened in America, you have no idea. But back here. So Rav Menashe Klein, and he says, and women are davening, and then he accuses the schools, even the Batei Yaakov, that they're letting the women daven, and then the women want to daven together, you don't want to daven alone. And before you know it, the women want their own prayer groups, and before you know it, they're going to want this slippery slope. And you could see from Rabbi Menashe Klein, his attitude is, women shouldn't daven. Don't teach them how to daven. So I hope no one misunderstood me, but I went into a little discourse, and Shaya wrote me a beautiful letter, and I want to quote one part of it. But just to summarize Shaya's letter, which is actually summarizing a shiur I gave years ago, that there's a whole machlokes ha'poskim, the Rambam, Nachmanides and Maimonides, is tefillah a chiyuv d'oraita, is a chiyuv d'rabbanan, is there a format for tefillah? The tefillah, the format, even it's a chiyuv d'oraita, is the rabbanan, what's the heta for davening, b'yetzara? So, meyika hadin, and already you find this in Chazal, women should be davening. What are we davening for? Our lives. New women also have lives. So the Rishonim already deal with this, the famous Abudraham. The woman's lifestyle doesn't lend itself to interrupting. So therefore, halacha l'maisa, me'ika hadin, a woman should certainly daven shachris and mincha. As I told you last week, the Rav's two daughters, to the best of my, I certainly know Tova, and I believe Atara too, daven three times a day. Because even though the original Marev was Rishut, and in Lo Aleinu, in Shira Chadasha, now women are leading the Marev service, because it's Rishut. No, if it's Rishut, a woman can lead it. It's like Lachad Dodi. I mean, it's beyond words where we've gone. And the Haredi world is laughing at us. Okay, they have other problems, but I don't like to see the Haredi world laugh at us. I would rather like to see the Haredi world emulate us. Those of us that conquered the Western world and were part of the Torah world, because the Western world is unfortunately or fortunately here to stay. You're not going to get rid of a computer. I see people at bus stops are looking at their computer to figure out if they're going to get when the bus is due and if they're going to get there in time, or should they take other means of transportation. If you want to demonstrate against cars. Over the last few weeks, maybe 50 people were killed in Israel. Since cars were invented, 30 million plus were killed, I'm told. You want to demonstrate? Demonstrate against cars. Nutzvelt helfen via taken bunkers. I apologize. Where is Josh? Josh, I apologize. I don't know how to translate that, but it means a corn on your foot that you got to scrape off. It has no life. You're going to demonstrate against the health from the Titan bunkers. By the time Josh finishes medical school and dental school, he's going to be no Yiddish as well, and he's going to teach me Persian. Okay. So if a woman can't daven two times a day, she at least should say one tefillah a day. And that's what my wife was taught, and that's the way my wife lives. And she says Kriyat Shema at night. There are other women who she knows Kriyat Shema by heart. With all the Pirkei Tehillim, those are all by heart. She's been saying it since the time she's at least 8, 9 years old. Other women say a prayer in the morning. I believe my daughters daven twice a day. I believe my granddaughters-in-law, I'm not going to ask them, but I've seen my granddaughters-in-law davening twice a day. But as I told you, I saw something in Michala that I was so disturbed by what happened. And if you'll ask any of the Israeli students at Michala, the great ladies that I taught in the 70s, many of them are great-grandmothers already today, grandmothers for sure, great-grandmothers perhaps as well. So they will tell you, I would come into class, I'd say, I would tell the class, I'm shaken up. Why? Because Rabbi Breuer, Rabbi Doctor, he had an honorary doctor at Hebrew U. There were two Rabbi Mordechai Breuers. One was the historian, one was the Bible expert. The one who taught in Michlalar and taught in Alon Shvut was the Bible expert. He was a character par excellence. Yeah, this guy, when you took his class, you didn't fall asleep. That much I can tell you. So, and he would see women davening, and he loves so well, it said. And I don't tolerate it. So from that I learned, I would imagine, Rav Shimshon Fuld, Hirsch's great-grandson, evidently in Germany, the women didn't daven. But chas v'chalila, I'm not in favor of women not davening. I want them to daven. But I want to tell you, in this letter that Shaya sent me, he quotes a sefer that quotes Rav Hillel Zaks. You can't imagine the memories that brought back to me. Rav Hillel Zaks, he just died, Zeket Tzadik Levrach. Everyone I know is gone. It's unbelievable. I live in a world with ghosts. I mean, plain and simple. Grandson. He was Rav Mendel Zaks' son. I learned in Lakewood with him. He was always iconoclastic. If you know anything about his life, I don't want to go into details. He continued to the end of his life. He was the sharpest dresser in Lakewood. He was famous for the most colorful ties. He had no idea of Hillel Zaks. But here in Israel, he was a Rosh Yeshiva. He split with the yeshiva, opened his own yeshiva. He was iconoclastic. He held like the Satmi, you don't vote in the elections. Interesting individual. So in this sefer about women davening, he writes that he spoke to Hillel Zaks, the grandson of the Chafetz Chaim, who related that his grandfather told his mother she was exempt from davening because of her obligations to her family, but that she should make an effort to daven at least one tefillah a day. Now, what you're quoting here cannot be correct, because you're saying this was his mother, the first wife of the Chafetz Chaim. He's from the second wife.
It says here
she was exempt. Nevertheless, that his grandmother, the second wife of the Chafetz Chaim, was not his grandmother. Grandmother, I'm getting all confused. He was Reb Hillel, his grandmother. The second wife of the Chafetz Chaim. He was from Reb Hillel's. His father, Reb Mendel, married the second wife's daughter. Anyway, she was daven, known to daven regularly and with fervor. I'll accept that. There's a tate de satre here, but you see the psak. By the way, it's his mother, not his grandmother.
His mother was the daughter. Was told by the Chafetz Chaim that she's part of the daven, even though the Chafetz Chaim's wife
daven further. I just want to tell you one story. His mother is the woman, the famous story that Jerusalem was shaking in the late 70s. It was mamish, an atomic bomb hit. Reb Mendel Zaks died. I yet met with him in Jerusalem. He was my Rebbe. He was my Bochein. We were Chaverim, Reb Mendel Zaks. So Reb Mendel Zaks died. So the Almana was left an Almana. So Friday night, she lived in Montestoff till the end of her life. Friday night, a different student would come in to make Kiddush for her. Now I'm sure she could have made Kiddush by herself, but some women, I've seen it more than once, they want a man to make Kiddush, even though a woman may be more obligated in Kiddush than a man. You know why? Because you davened already Kabbalah Shabbos, so you already said Zechacha Meshlechacha in the Shmon Esrei. And then in Maganava, then Kleinigkeit. I mean, there's a lot of lumdus there. We say Ke'en Chazarat Hashatz Friday night. So the man already only has a Chiyuv on Kiddush, the Rabbanon. A woman is Chiyuv in Kiddush and Chiyuv in Shmir Shabbos, didn't say anything if she didn't daven. So, but she wants the man to make Kiddush. So one time, and I have stories like this in the Silva era that I was an eyewitness to. Read the chapter, Orthodoxy After World War II. It's probably the most famous chapter I ever wrote. It's quoted, requoted, requoted. Baruch Hashem. So a guy comes in to make Kiddush, and she gives him the kos, and he says, "Ani musupakim yesh b'zeh sheyur." He was afraid to make Kiddush. There's no sheyur. How do you say that in English? Sheyur. Size, contents. She says to him, "Al hakos hazeh hachafetz chayim kiddush." This was the kos of the chafetz chayim. Boy, does that story speak. So anyway, but now I want to end off. Look, this is what I say to everyone, and I acknowledge it. The question of feminism is a work in motion. We are being challenged, and rightfully so. The world has changed. And you learn in life, you can't change back the clock. When I speak, I think I told you I'm going to give a special talk in Beit Shemesh on a book launch of my dear student, Rabbi Herbert Cohn, on kosher movies. So my talk is entitled Living in Two Worlds, What We Can Learn from the Movies. And it's a serious talk on certain movies and what we can learn from them. I'm beginning the talk with a story about my Rebbe from Shanghai, Reb Chenoch Fishman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And you'll see how talk on kosher movies, everyone laughs. So what the heck is Rakevet wasting his time talking on movies? All right, you have to help a chaver, a talmid, have to do a chesed, but it's much more than that. But you see, Rav Chenoch Fishman, one thing I'll admire about the Shanghai crowd, they knew they could not change back the clock. We didn't hear day in and day out in class, "You're a bunch of phonies, a bunch of fakers, a bunch of American ice fots." Ice fops, good for nothings. Got it? Ice fops, throw them out. Not like Rakefet. "I let you guys have it, you're a cliche, I'm a cliche-ny, all right, you get the message." They understood America's here to stay, the Western world is here to stay. We have to build Torah in the context of what's happening. Women today graduate not only college, university. Every door is open to them, all the way from, I have students, heart surgeons, women who studied with me, world-famous lawyers. You know, Rebbe Meir Yaakov Soloveitchik, his wife, they tell me, is a world-class legal mind and a frum woman at Sadekit. I propose him for president of YU. I mean, that would be tremendous role models. You can't change back the clock. My wife cries all the time, my daughters all work, and my granddaughters-in-law all work, and who takes care of the kids, and the kids need a mother home when the kids come home, and they need a hot meal, and my wife is furious. All right, my wife is very old-fashioned. Nothing I can do about it, okay? In the Hasidic world today in Israel, in high tech, there are more Hasidic women than I think teaching in classes today. Can I hurry? The men work. I don't know. They tell me that the Gera women, and they say even from Bells, they now have places that are geared. Oh, yeah, you're right. They finish in time for the women to get home when the kids come home. You're right. Right. I read that. But you can't. Women today are going to go. There's a lady whose husband is a Rosh Yeshiva in the Yeshiva Chesda. I think her name is Levenberg, Professor Levenberg. They say she may win a Nobel Prize yet for her research. I think she's at Tel Aviv. I asked one of my granddaughters-in-law who were in science. They met her. So you see, there's a reality. Now, not only that, they don't have to churn the butter. They don't have to bake the bread. what you can buy today, I mean, in the state of Israel, whenever I come out of Rami Levi, I'm, you know, Mike Malk and I dance at Kazatska. We remember what was in 69. We were just telling our grandchildren and great-grandchildren yesterday how there was no dry cereal here. Today, there's more dry cereal here than you have in America. All the imports from Switzerland, all the imports from America, and all the different dry cereals they make here, it's beyond words, the choice. Wow, who can believe it? So the woman goes to shul, she wants to daven. So you see, it's a work in motion. We have to be guided on one hand by the Vah Hashem Zu Halacha. We cannot innovate halachically. But within the context of the halacha, what can we do to accommodate this feeling by the women? And this I throw out to you. All I know is my wife goes to Yakada Davin. I come home from, I got home this morning. My grandsons, we always compare how long their davening took and my davening. We began 6:30. I was home 10 minutes to 8. I couldn't understand one word about Korah. He read the Klala. He reads fast all the time, so you can imagine reading the Klala. And then my grandson also is the Baal Korah. He got the Klala, and he says he's the Baal Korah. They made a special Mishaberach for him. I got the Chazak, the Shabbos. So my grandson also reads quickly, but we daven quicker. No, I get home, I wake up my wife. She goes to Yakar. Yakar is the longest davening since Jews started davening Shabbos morning. They love it. They're like chassidim, like Derech Chassidim. Before Kriyat HaTorah, two shayorim, one in English, one in Hebrew. You have a davening gur, they break. They learn. It becomes a base medrash. The elder chassidim make kiddush, but most of them are just learning. Then they daven the Kriyas HaTorah Musaf. Oh my gosh, Yakar. The women love it. All right, there are no innovations there, but it's a work in motion. What will come out of it 100 years from now? Having lived 3,500 years until today, I am very confident what will come out of it will be satisfying and give the women expression and will be in total consonance with the Vah Hashem Zu Halacha. Okay. Now I just want to go a drop further. So last week, after he finished with the davening and he's dealing with Dov Frimmerman, it's so fascinating who the two people are here. So after he finishes the davening, he goes into why women have to wait 90 days. And again, you have to know who your father is. And she can be pregnant with the husband who just divorced her. She marries right away, you'll never know who your father is. And this has tremendous halachic consequences.
Don't you have DNA?
Today, yeah. Herbie, you're talking in the year 2016. This was written 30 years ago, so relax. Number one. Number two, DNA, you should know, is 99% accurate. A lot of DNA is going to be tested now. Did anyone hear the news at 3 o'clock? Anyone know what I'm talking about? Anyone understand what I'm saying? Anyone here familiar with Washington to Washington and knows the story of a life of an individual who I happen to know by heart? Now, what do you read in Washington? There are a guy, I don't want to mention his name, he's a good guy, but we'll leave his name out. 10 years he works in communist Russia for the Mossad. When that comes to an end, because he and his wife worked in communist Russia, all his three daughters did amazing things for Klal Yisrael. The best example, I never said a word to my children, but you set an example. They follow. So one of my daughters got involved with the missing in action from the battle in Sultan Yaqub, right? 1982. Three boys never came back. Three bodies have never been found. I can't give you any more details. I can only tell you, if I could tell you the story of what I did, Alex Glassman would change his name to Alex Glass Rakefet in honor of his Rebbe. He would say, I'm very proud to have known Aaron Rakefet. The army actually changed procedure because of one individual who you're staring at right now. But I can't talk. Forget anything I've said. In a few hundred years, maybe I can talk. Now, today, Putin, the greatest friend of the Jewish people, It is the only country, Gedalia, that you're allowed to live in outside of Israel, because it's the only Western country that observes the Sheva Mitzvah. Of course, they kill occasionally if you're, but that's Morei B'Malchut. You can overlook it. Morei B'Malchut. But homosexuality, you can't live in America. Absolutely forbidden, including Muncie and Teaneck and everything that goes with it. Absolutely forbidden. I'll be halacha. I mean, I'm being honest, looking to the Rambam about going back to Egypt. Okay. Oh boy, am I playing games today. Gentlemen, Putin is giving back to Israel the tank they have from Syria that Syria captured in 1982. That is the tank where two of the three missing boys, that was their tank. My dear Baumel youngster, and I believe the Katz youngster, listen to the radio again, but I believe Feldman's name was not mentioned, if I heard correctly. So it's Zach Baumel, a Hesder boy from Alon Shvut, and I believe, what was Katz's first name? Anyone can help me? Was it Yaakov Katz? Check it out. Check it out in Washington. Anyone have Washington here? And the Katz boy, let me just see his first name. I said Katz, Zachariah Baumel. It may have been Yaakov Katz, but I may be wrong. The first name may be wrong. Anyone remember? Tzvika Feldman. He was Zvi. Katz, I believe was Yaakov, but I have to check it. So Yaakov Katz was from Kerem Biafna. He danced before they went into battle. He says, a Hezda boy has to go into battle with a Muna, and they started dancing, and nothing ever came back. Not the bodies, not the boys. This tank is so important, because the bottom of the tank, DNA, maybe we can find out. I don't want to go further. What happened to the boys in the tank when it suffered a direct hit from the enemy? They jumped out of the tank. They went back into the tank. They tried to move the tank. Maybe DNA will reveal something. Okay, so that's to answer your question. We'll leave DNA aside now. But a woman, today you do, halachically, if people would insist that you did a pregnancy test, but she's not pregnant, ain't malach shosh. What was very fascinating is when I showed you the one line in the tshuva that, unfortunately, I understand better than anyone because of my involvement with Rabbi Menashe Klein, where he writes that if it's a child of the first father, even if that woman hated her first husband, divorced him, threw him out, ran away from him, the child has a right to know who his father is, and a father has a right to know who the son is. And you hear a reflection of his first marriage and what his wife did to him. So he says, this concept of waiting 90 days is for the absolute good of the woman, the good of the child, the healthy welfare of the Jewish people. And I gave you the most prominent example of all. What do you do when a woman has AID and you don't know who the father is? But everyone who they think is the father is a Kohen. The father gets up to Duchen, and the kid wants to duchen. What do you do if a woman, you don't know whose father, you see from the first marriage, the second marriage. The first marriage, the father's a Kohen. Second marriage, the father isn't. The kid thinks he's not a Kohen. He thinks the second father is his father. You must know who the father is. So that this concept of waiting 90 days is not an affront to women. Now, halacha lemaisa, you should know that a man has to wait even longer. Minig Yisrael, it's not Ma'ika Hadin, is that a man is not allowed to remarry before three festivals pass by. Can anyone tell me why? It is simple common sense. You're married. Of course, your generation may or may not understand it. You're married. This is your wife. This is your Eshet Ne'urim. And she drops dead, and you get married right afterwards. That's kavod hamet. That's v'hayu l'besar echad. So you have to wait three festivals. A woman, at the end of 90 days, Chazal encouraged her to marry for one simple reason. Rabbinic literature encourages her to marry for one simple reason that unfortunately is as true today as it's true since Adam and Chava were created. We don't want men to take advantage of a woman who is all alone. And I need not elaborate. You see what's going on. You see here in Yerushalayim, the city is shaking. Up north, they're shaking. Shem Yerachim, scandals we never dreamt about. Jews with long beards, payas, big black hats, and big kippot srukah. It's beyond comprehension. So halavai, women should remarry, husbands who know a little bit, and keep all the other men away. So a woman at the end of 90 days, we say, halavai, you should remarry. And a man, we say, you rotten, no good guy, you give your wife cover. Of course, even by, and he says this, but even by a man, there's an exemption. What's the exemption? It's what I refer to. My father didn't know how to boil a cup of coffee. My mother's second husband, Reb Moshe Eppenbach, didn't know how to make himself a cup of coffee. If a man is helpless and hapless, and as you say, has little children, so at the end of Shloshim, we permit him to remarry. I've already heard had Perim given in Shiva that there were little kids running around, and women satzit kaniyot take over a family. I have a Talmud was married to a Talmid, that's a very dear Talmid. Shalom, we'll mention his name, Shragai Arzi from Hebron, from Kiryat Arba, Hebron. So Shragai came to Israel, a kid from Toronto, or maybe 70, 71, and his parents were chalishing, fainting. He's in Israel, the word that's dangerous. They were Holocaust survivors, frightened Holocaust survivors. I met them afterwards. And I said to this poor kid, when do you go back? He says, I'm going back after the Chagim. I say, no, you're not going back. You are remaining in Israel. Why did your parents survive the Holocaust? P.S. He never went back, remained here, married a girl from Beverly Hills who had come in Aliyah, family, Balei Tshuva, wonderful. She died young of cancer. And a lot of little children, a tzaddikid who had never been married and raised the children, has a wonderful family, kala kavod to them. So anyway, I think we'll all agree so far that all these laws on marriage and remarriage are not against the woman, chas v'chalila. Avraham hechatan, what is on your mind?
A question regarding the Israel, that hatan should wait whole year cycle.
Three festivals. It's not a year. It's three festivals. It's like a neder.
During that time, it's very much likely that he'll come to sin. He's by himself.
Well, I don't know. The men I know, you're overstating. Say that in today's day and age, you may be right. I will not comment. But the world in which I lived, men were good men with decent marriage. Was marriage. Ugh. Remember, I told you in high school, I so regret I didn't write down the name of the books. I went to Doc Shapiro. He was an old-timer from the original faculty of Talmudical Academy from 1915, when my cousin Rabbi Rebel built the first yeshiva high school in America. So in my days, he was already retired, but he loved the yeshiva. He ran the library. So one time he gave me a book to write. I always loved memoir literature. Because it's real, it's alive. I can't understand. My wife reads novels, stupid novels. What does that mean? Well, literature is real. So, all right, what can you do? So, I read this book about some Mr. Big who had come to America after World War I and made it big in the garment industry. And he's writing a book about his life. And he writes, he came from a Hasidic background. And he was 18, and he met his wife under the chuppah. His parents, her parents, he was 18, she was 17, and he writes, she was the greatest gift that the Ribbono Shel Olam ever gave me. Okay? She made my life. Could you imagine? They met under the chuppah. Chassid, they didn't even take a peek at each other. Litvishes take a peek. The old time chassid, they didn't even take a peek. I didn't get married, so I saw the chassid, I'd say Yerena, no, Mela. Got it? So, a man to wait three regalim. But all right, you're right. If a guy is a manuvel, marry him off at the end of 30 days. How you can do it, I don't know. But halachically, you may be correct. Ah, my dear students, there's another halacha he deals with. Hilchatisha Devin Ezra, Perik Yud Gimel. I'm quoting from Halacha Aleph here. And afterwards, Halacha Yud Aleph. Here he goes into all the details. Anyone, Kolisha Shenit Gasha, Nitalmach, Arez the Lord, Tinase. You have to wait 90 days. And this is what we spoke about, the 90-day requirement. You can see it all in Halacha Aleph in great detail. In Halacha Aleph, Gazru Chachomim Shelo Yisa Adam Velo Yekadesh Meuberet Chavero Velo Meiniket Chavero Ad sheyiyya levlad chaf dalid chadashim. Wow. That you can't marry a woman who is pregnant, even though it's clear it's from the first husband, there's no doubt about it, or a woman who is nursing. A great deal, and you can go further, you can see the halacha, you don't need me to cite it. A great deal has been written on this topic. What is it about, essentially? That Chazal were choshish for the child. Second husband may or may not be decent to the baby. It's not his child. I had an incident in Midrashit Moriah that I can never forget. And I want to tell you, one of the reasons I gave up all my collegiate teaching, the real reason is I felt at a certain point in life I have to be mitrakez more in my writing, my scholarship, and to teach on a collegiate level, you don't need rakefet, my own students can teach. But there was another factor that bothered me so. I'm teaching girls from Orthodox homes. By the year 2000, at least one quarter of the students I was teaching came from divorced homes. It was unbelievable. I just spoke with America, I told you. So my Talmud told me in his little area in Lawrence, there are like three or four cases he knows who got married with, and within the year got divorced. I mean, there's no concept of holiness, sacredness. That's what I spoke about Friday. When you're totally self-centered, you can't work out a marriage, right? Didn't we mention that Friday? So, before class begins, we have a meeting with the dean, Rabbi Burglass. Now, I never want to know about a student. Well, I'm not interested in all who she is, who her parents are. I want to relate to the student as she is, as she appears to me, as my take on her. I'm not interested in anyone else's understanding. So Rabbi Burglass always honored this. And then he said, this is one time, I know Rabbi Rakefet doesn't like when I tell you about the background of students, but I have to tell you a little story about this girl. I couldn't believe my ears. It involved Brooklyn and it involved Lawrence, if I remember correctly. Parents got divorced. Her father remarried, her mother remarried. She was about 16 years at the time. No one wanted her. Part of the condition of the remarriage, they don't take baggage along from the previous marriage. So what did they do? There were two older sisters who already were over 18. They rented an apartment in Flatbush. Money was not a factor. Some Jews are rolling in money. They rented an apartment in Flatbush for the three girls, one of them a minor, living with her two older sisters. Oh, was I shocked. But you see, this happens in life. So we are worried stiff that if the woman is pregnant, the man can make demands upon her. For all you know, he wants her to lose the baby. He's not interested in raising someone else's child. If she's nursing, who knows if he'll be kind to her, considerate, not aggravate her. A nursing mother can't get upset. I have granddaughters-in-laws, some nurse, some don't. My wife feels today, in this day and age, there she's a mutton woman. Why do they nurse? There's everything available, formula, all types of different formulas, advanced formulas, lactose, no lactose, anything you can imagine. And yet research shows that the healthiest children are the children who were nursed by their mother. Who knows what it'll be? You'll see the halacha that he can harm, he can make her pregnant. When she's pregnant, it becomes much harder to nurse, to take care of a pregnancy and a child. Let her wait 24 months. And Rav Menashe Klein says, look, I know that this halacha, we can find a solution. But obviously, you'll see in the Ramah, obviously, let's say she stopped nursing. Let's say the man commits himself and puts up money that she can buy all the milk powder she wants, and we're certain no harm will come to the child. But and we can be matir b'di'evet, but particularly if you're worried about men taking advantage of her, it's all there in the Ramah and in the subsequent rabbinic literature. But Rav Menashe Klein says, we see from here that the halacha is concerned with the dignity of the woman. The halacha is concerned with her child. The halacha is concerned with life. And these halachas should not be viewed as a put-down for a woman. Chas v'chalila. And finally, at the very end, and it ties right in with your class, how many were you in Rabbi Bednash's class a few minutes ago? Okay, Rabbi Bednash goes overtime, so we shift the populations, but there are some brave individuals who only had a 10-minute break and show up in dignity. Gentlemen, at the end of the class, Rabbi Bednash was talking about dancing on Yontif, clapping hands on Yontif, musical instruments on Yontif. You're learning at Hilchos Shabbos. It's a sugya in Beya, in Mesechet Beya, as the way we were taught to pronounce it. Right or wrong? All right, it's an Issa de Rabbanon, that you're not allowed to play musical instruments, Shemi Yitaken Kli, you'll fix it, and we're worried if you clap, if you sing. And Rabbi Besh was being mafapul with you, Ledevas Simcha, and the Mishnah Berurah, and the Shmiyat Shabbat Gechel Chata. Right or wrong, Rafi, am I right or wrong? Did I hear correctly? Baruch Hashem.
Right.
My ears are working. Okay. I love you, because a good boy, good boy. North Philadelphia, you got to know the distance he has traveled, and his son actually heard a few words of my Shayur on Friday.
Saw your picture of the Rav, you loved it very much.
Ah, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. So take a picture of it and leave it. If you be a chassid, if a Lubavitcher, leave it in his crib, but don't do it to the Rav. The Rav wouldn't be happy. You know, two different worlds. Gentlemen, now let me tell you a story. I just told it to Rabbi Bednash. I'm sorry I have to tell it in Yiddish. I'll translate it into English because I'm living it. So when I was a kid, we lived in the Bronx. You don't know how we grew up. Natan v'Natan, we didn't see a drop of Torah. You know my description in Washington of what it was like growing up in the Bronx. When Rebbetzin Katz died, the Maspid read from my book, that's how we eulogized her, the Katz family on Friday night. Zichrona Levracha. Oh, we didn't see a drop of Yiddishkeit. Shavuot was coming. Shavuot in America is the least observed holiday. Sukkot has a little crowd comes to shul because Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they heard there's going to be Sukkot. Pesach is Easter time. Matzahs, Manashevitz. All right. Jews come out of the woodworks. But Shavuot, who ever heard of Shavuot? What, when, where, Matan Torah? That affects the bulk of American Jewry like a Chinaman dancing on the moon. So in order to feel a little Shavuot, we would walk to YU, or I don't know if I slept over. It was about a 35-minute walk from my house to the yeshiva, from the Bronx to the yeshiva. I couldn't do it today, but as a kid, I could do it very, very, very easily.
There was a bridge?
Of course, the Washington Bridge. Not the George Washington, the Washington from the Bronx. I live down, you go down university, and then you turn down, and before you know it, you're at the Grand Concourse. Once you're at the Grand Concourse, another 10 minutes walk, I'm at my house. So we're at the Yeshiva Shavuot, and it was beautiful, and the Mashgiach, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessen, who had such a great influence on Rabbi Rubin and myself. And, we're dancing and singing. And, you know, I'm a kid who's learning. And I go over to Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessen, I say, Rebbe, Vitom in Tanusin, how are you allowed to dance? It's against Taisfes, the Gemara in Beitza. Clap hands, sing. And he answered me, I never forgot the answer. Didn't quote a Mishnah Brewer, didn't quote any Sefer, couldn't quote the Shmir Shabbos Gehilchata, didn't exist yet. But he said, Mir haben getanzt in Slabatka. Und der Alte und der Levush Mordechai haben das nicht bemerkt. We danced in Slabatka. And the Alte, you know who the Alte was? Reb Nutten Zvi Finkel, the Mashkiach, the legendary Mashkiach. The man that's the bulk of Reb Nesson Kamenetsky's two volumes, Making of a Gadol, is about the Alte of Slabatka. It's very well indexed. I just found something. I knew there's a story there that I want to use in my talk in Rav Hutner, and through the index I found it. Okay. What? No, his son, Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel. That's his son, and he says, and the Mashkiach said to me, we danced in Slabatka, and the altar and the Levush Mordechai was Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein, the author, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Gaon Adir, didn't say one word of rebuke. And if we could dance in Slabatka, then we can dance in Yeshiva University in Washington Heights. Let me tell you, that's exactly the way. Exactly. Okay, you're okay. You're not blinded by the sun. Okay, what a day today. Rain in the morning, sun, Baruch Hashem. This is exactly the way Reb Nutten Zvi Finkel, Reb Menashe Klein ends his tshuva, and this is exactly the thinking, the title of probably the most famous publication of our Rebbe and the yeshiva, Reb Heschel Shachter, Zvi Shachter. My chaver. And he writes, we have a lot of problems today and a lot of questions. And the women shouldn't be upset. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves them as much as the men or even more. And Adarabba, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar LeMoshe, Kol Toma LeVeit Yaakov. And what did Chazal say? Rashi quotes it. B'Loshen Rakah. Men, you beat the hell out of course. A man basically is a self-centered beast. But a woman, Lashon Raka, dignity, respect. Speak to her properly. Raka. But we have questions. There are questions today. And women are facing value choices. How should they act? And he quotes the pasuk in Shir HaShirim Aleph. Im lo teidilach hayafe ben hashim tzeilach ve'ikvei hatzon. If you're not certain what to do, follow the footsteps of the sheep. And Rashi and many of the respondents that come after Rashi, what does this mean? The footsteps of the sheep? Darkei avotecha harishonim shekiblu toratai v'shamru mishmati u'mitzvotai u'lechi v'dakam. We have to look at the early generations. And this is exactly Reb Heschel's theme. He calls the Sefer Tzi'i be'ikvei Hatzon. And this is exactly the heart of what I said before. There are new questions. Life is not stagnant. The Western world moves on. My generation could never dream, if you would have told us in 1950, there's going to be a time in the United States of America when they're going to fire judges or put them on trial or throw them into jail for refusing to marry same-sex couples, we would have said, impossible. But the world moves on. If anyone would ever told us, there was a judge in Be'er Sheva had a case decades ago with homosexuality. And he threw the case out. He said, marriage is a lock and a key. It only works between a man and a woman. Said it beautifully, dukva nukva. Yeah, maybe he was might have been a frum judge, knew what he was quoting, the Zohar, a lock and a key. Who would ever dream the world today? And in our world, in Toronto now, they're having a whole session. My talmidim are involved with lesbians, homosexualities, whatever the trans are, I don't know, I can't even pronounce it. Don't want to pronounce it, transgender, trans, this, restivites, it's unbelievable. Everything is accepted. This is frightening. Absolutely frightening.
Post this Friday, two magazines, both on the transgender issue.
Not up to say that yet. So, of course, Visa Kritzels in America, it reaches here as well. And you see what's going on. We're being called fascist. We're lucky it's only over Eretz Yisrael. Everyone who voted Likud or voted by Yehudi is a Kahananik. It's unbelievable. A lot of people are joining my club. Aaron Rakefet, I admit, I grew up on the lap of Meir Kahana. That's correct.
The left has been doing this for 70 years.
But it's
anybody who was a brown shirt.
Right. It's unbelievable today. What's going on?
Okay.
Say that. I'm giving a talk in America. The problem is it's on Shabbos, so I can't record it. But I'm giving a talk where I agree with Meir and where I have a different course of action than Meir, and I'll prove that my course of action is correct by dealing with Meir's very own family. But leave it for the maiden voyage in Lauren Sharei Tfila. But we're dealing with it. We're struggling. We have to be guided by two basic principles. One, Torah Tashem Tamima. And when the Western world conflicts with Torah, Torah has to win out. On the other hand, we have to be sensitive. The questions are real. The Western world is here. What can we accommodate in dignity? And what do we have to reject and demand surrender? And this is the challenge. We're not going to answer it overnight. We're not going to answer it in a day. But as long as Jews walk the face of the earth, we will face these challenges. And I begin. We have arrived. Don't know if I'll finish today. What I don't finish today is Rav Hashem. Ben Shalem should keep us in health. I should survive all my summer obligations, including the final stay in Palm Springs with the Ror Chabad teaching conference. And we will finish when we meet again. Gentlemen, Moria Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, I alluded to this on Friday. By the way, I pulled the wool over your eyes on Friday. No one even realizes that. I gave, I speak, an hour and 15, an hour and 20 minutes. The two most important issues that the Rav had to deal with, I didn't even mention. And that was done on purpose, because had I mentioned them, Natan, it's another 21 years of lectures. No? What do you say, Alex? What didn't I mention? The two most important issues becomes a Mizrachiite, a Gudda to Mizrachi, and synagogue council. But we'll leave it for another time. Got me? Okay. Baruch Hashem, Josh. Gentlemen, if we had the Rav today, we would not have a lot of our problems, because the Rav had universal respect. As I said Friday, Shira Chadasha is absolutely conservative Judaism, and yet they have a mechitza. That mechitza is there because of the Rav's public stand. And even today, So many years after that public stand back in the 50s, no one will dare take the machitza down. They'll call themselves open Orthodox, modern Orthodox, call it what you wish, partnership prayer groups, but they won't take the machitza down. Today, we have no one like the Rav. With all due respect to the YU Rashi Yeshiva, some will listen, some will be critics, some will turn to the faculty in Chovevei Torah, bring in someone from the so-called Haredi world, he's treif puzzle, of course he's Haredi. It's a sad world today. All right, could be I grew up in the same world, but the Rav was a figure that you couldn't dismiss. Not the Haredi world could dismiss him, and not any part of the modern so-called Orthodox world. The Haredi world, there's the classic story from Reb Moshe Feinstein, the Rav's first cousin, once removed, Reb Pesha, Rebbetzin Pesha's first cousin, the Rav's mother, they were first cousins, their mothers were sisters. So there's a famous story when they came out and Arsid, the synagogue council, you all know that the Rav refused to sign the Issa, we're going back to 1956. A lot of pressure was put on the Rav. Many Rashi Yeshiva, well known, who signed, contacted him, and they couldn't budge him. And when the Issa came out and the Rav's signature was not there, so Reb Moshe, with his fabulous sense of humor, said, I'll say it in Yiddish and then translate, Ibamol, alam alsmal mehabana klal ashtika kahadaya. All over, we have a rule. When someone is silent, it means he admits. Doesn't differ with you. Abul das damol, this time, Ichabmeir, I'm afraid that my cousin's silence is not acquiescence. It's because he differs. And you see, everyone understood that. Nassim Kamenetsky in Making of a Gadol has a story, there are various versions, but the heart of the story is that Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, Reb Aaron Kutler, and Reb Yitzchak Kutner went to see Reb Moshe, and they pleaded with Reb Moshe that our Issa has no effect because Rabbi Soloveitchik hasn't joined on, but if you come out and criticize him, it'll have a big effect. People will say this Issa is serious. And Reb Moshe refused to criticize his cousin in public. So when they walked out, it is reported that they attributed, that Nassim attributed to Reb Yaakov. Reb Yaakov looked who's with him, Reb Aaron Kutler, and Reb Aaron Kutler, Reb Yitzchak Kutner, and Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. Reb Yaakov said, you see, if you don't learn in Slabutka, you can't be a Klal Yisrael leader. Reb Yaakov, Reb Aaron, and Reb Yitzchak Kutner all Talmidim of the Alt of Slabutka. But Reb Moshe essentially was never really learned in a master yeshiva. He learned with his father, Reb David Feinstein, and he learned with Reb Pesach Priskin in Shikolov. He never was exposed to the Alta. So that was their critique of Reb Moshe. But what does the story show you? That the Rav, you could not dismiss easily. Today, the Haredi world, you know, is a world unto itself. There's no one in the modern Orthodox world they even look up to. Even though Reb Heschel Shachter may be a bigger London than anyone in the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, but he once attended an Aguda convention, and without going into great detail, I know names, not important now, some of the Gedolim said to Reb Moshe Shera, if you don't throw that man out, we're getting up and walking out. They did not want the YU Rosh Yeshiva to sit Abenon up front. And it shows you the attitude. But the Rav, you couldn't dismiss, not the left and not the right. Mori Urebi was attuned to all these problems. The Rav did not live in a sheltered area. He did not live in Brooklyn. He lived in Boston. He lived in Roxbury. Did he move to Dorchester afterwards? Brookline? How does it work? Brookline, and Dorchester was...
That was in the neighborhood next door.
Next door to Roxbury. Okay. So the Rav did not live in a sheltered area. As a matter of fact, the Rav couldn't handle New York, and the Rav said publicly, I have it, I believe I have it in translation in the Rav, I gave it in the Kollel, I translated the whole talk, a talk he gave in the mid-50s. The Rav said, when I get onto the plane and the plane closes its doors and it's leaving New York, going to Boston, oh, he says, I feel better. He says, New York is like a zoo. Every animal has its own cage. But in Brookline, in Boston, Baruch Hashem, we all get along. And there's a lot of truth to that. But because who the Rav was, as Rebbe said, your problems are my problems. And he had to deal with all these problems. They came to him. Feminism, what was happening, was not alien. In 1973, in the RCA convention, the Rav gave an unbelievable talk on Pashat Korach. That talk has been written up and has been summarized, published. It's on a tape. It could be the tape is available on one of the websites. And in that talk at RCA, he dealt with the problem of feminism and all that was happening. Let me just give you a little background on RCA. Rabbinical Council of America, we're going to talk about it in great detail in the Monday course next year, the year afterwards. It's a product of the United States. Originally in America, you had the Union of Orthodox Rabbis, Agudas HaRabbanim. They were all East European Rabbanim. And then as what you call YU today, then it was REITs, as your yeshiva and yeshiva college started to graduate rabbis. The European rabbis said, get the heck out of here. These aren't rabbis. What do they know? Don't play games with us. We learned in the Luzhin. We learned in Slabodka. We learned in Mir. And here you have these American stupid kids who know a little Gemara and a little Halacha, and they think they're rabbis. So the Agudas Rabbanim refused to take these American graduates. And I'm summarizing what I could talk about for hours, and we'll talk about that as with details and names, etc. It was a bad mistake. By the 1930s, the American rabbis started to organize themselves. There were the YU rabbinic alumni, the REITs rabbinic alumni. There was the rabbinical body of the OU. And everyone got together and formed the Rabbinical Council of America. If my memory is correct, it begins around 1935. Today, all you have left in America is the Rabbinical Council of America, and the Agudas Rabbanim is a totally moribund situation, organization. If you know the news, they have property on the Lower East Side. Big prize fights, as usual, are going on. Who owns the property so they can sell it and make millions of dollars? That's what's happened. But by 1975... RCA was already, 1970, RCA was a major body, a major organization. Hundreds of REITs graduates, many Chaim Berlin graduates, Torah Vadas graduates, RJJ graduates, Lakewood graduates, anyone with a valid smicha from a recognized institution or recognized Rabbanim was accepted into RCA. Now, at every convention, already back to the 50s, the Rav was the focal moment of the convention. At these conventions, he generally spoke on a homiletic, philosophic, hashkafic topic. He let his hair down. It was not the Shir, Shas, and Paiskim. When we learned with the Rav in the classroom, all we thought the Rav knew was Shas and Paiskim. Homiletics did not enter the Shia. Philosophy did not enter the Shia. Hashkafa did not enter the Shia. All that the Rav was concerned with was the Gemara, the Rashi, the Tosfos, the Ravid, the Rambam, Reb Chaim, etc. But at the RCA, with his rabbanim, with people that he was more or less considered his friends, his colleagues. He let his hair down and he dealt with Inyana Diyoma. Let me start the talk on Korach. I'm going to start not dealing with the present day problems, but just give you a feeling of how the Rebbe approached Korach and then how he leads in to the present day problems. Prior to Korach, this is word by word the Rebbe. By the way, the Shirim were given in English. The Rebbe's total mastery of English was well known. He did speak with an accent. And if you're not attuned to the Rebbe's accent, it is a little bit difficult to understand him on a tape. But if you make the effort, you can understand him. It wasn't a terrible accent, but it was an accent.
Who transcribed what you're reading?
I transcribed it. And the Rebbe spoke with an accent, but these shayurim were in English because the world had changed. Danny Greer had smacked the Rebbe around 1960, September. The world never went back to what it was. As Rakefet says, it was the end of Torah in the United States. Everyone became a kli shlishi. I'm, Baruch Hashem, a kli sheni. But two shayurim remained in Yiddish. The Yortzeit Shir in memory of his father, which evidently he felt his father was listening to. He couldn't give that in English. And the Tshuva Drasha, where he relived Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Reb Chaim, and Bris, that remained in Mamalosh, and that remained in Yiddish. Outside of that, everything had switched to English. Originally in the RCA, he spoke Yiddish. In Boston, he spoke Yiddish. The Chevrus Shas was in Yiddish. I don't know the exact year in Boston. Everything switched to English. Friday, Saturday night in Boston was in English, at least in the later years. I still heard tapes of the Rebbe in Yiddish in Boston Saturday night. But certainly by 1960, it all was in English. I'll tell you what else remained in Yiddish. The Shir at Moria. That Shir remained in Yiddish. But you have to understand, the Shir in Moria was organized by Balabatim from the Diamond District, where all their business was done in Yiddish. Everything transcribed in Yiddish. These were immigrants to America. Some of them were survivors who made it big in America. Their lingo was Yiddish. So that Shir, I believe to the very end, was never switched to English. That remained in the Rebbe's magnificent Yiddish. Obviously in Yiddish it was... He was compared to Churchill, Tabi Ibn. They used to say, there are three people who know how to speak in this world. The Rebbe in Yiddish, Tabi Ibn in English, Churchill in English. When he spoke English, it was great, but it wasn't as moving, as it was not the same emotion that you felt in Yiddish. Rav Teitz, on the radio, in English, he gave it. He began in Yiddish. Like in later years, it wasn't in English.
Always Yiddish.
No. Always Yiddish. Okay, so Rav Teitz, son gave it in English. Okay. Prior to Korach, there were only complaints, not rebellions, prompted by understandable needs and fears, as one would expect in a frightening desert, which induces exaggerated and emotional extremes. For instance, when the Jews say in Vamidbar, Gam Yilidei Ha'anak Ra'inu Sham. You know, you're in a desert. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. You think all you see are giants. There are other complaints. These are natural complaints. They were frightened stiff that the Egyptians are coming to kill them, to conquer them. They're in the desert. What will we drink? They were hungry. Mi yitain mutainu biyat Hashem b'yeret Mitzrayim b'shifteinu l'asich ha'basa b'alchanu lechem l'sova ki otzeitem otonu al hamidbar hazeh Lahamit at Kol Hakal Hazeberav. And you can understand that. They're leaving Egypt. They're leaving security. They don't know where they're going. They're frightened. And even the golden calf, the Rav said, was not prompted by idolatrous ideas or philosophical doubts, but rather by understandable, primitive, instinctual fears that would emerge in an arid wilderness. Moshe had not returned. The people felt leaderless, lost like sheep which had strayed from its herd and shepherd. They sought a tangible symbol to replace Moshe Rabbeinu. This is explicit in the words, Kum asay lanu Elohim asay yelchu lefaneinu. Ki ze Moshe ha'isha shechalanu le'eretz Mitzrayim lo yadanu ma hayalo. So you see, all these complaints are not rebellious. It's like a kid in Torah Shraga. He's complaining the food is no good. All right? Caterer is no good. A kid in Torah Shraga, his Rebbe doesn't understand him. It's not a rebellion. It's what happens in life. Kid is used to certain standards. Kid is used. Not everyone can hit off with the same Rebbe. Some kids choose this Rebbe. Some kids choose that Rebbe. But that's not rebellious. Rebellious means you want to close the institution, you want to bring it down. But the first rebellion with Korach, we have a planned conspiracy prompted by a lust for power, initiated by a small group of elite individuals. Demagogic means to arouse the masses were employed. Dissidents and malcontents with previous grievances were drawn in. The goal was to topple Moses from leadership. A new ideology was formulated based on a presumption of greater democracy and a more logical halacha. It was not a spontaneous outburst of the masses, but rather a conspiracy for power from the very outset. And the Rav here is very powerful, and he'll elaborate. But you see, this is not just complaints. This is a rebellion. The halacha is not logical. Something is wrong here. We believe in democracy, but they were very smart. In order to have a rebellion, you can't just go with the illogical concepts. Masses couldn't care less. But if you bring in the people who had prior complaints, no food, no water, we're in the desert. Wow. As Yitzchak says, you don't know how much the right has suffered here from the day the state was established. We could have had a civil war with the Altna Lena. You got to give all the credit to Menachem Begin that he gave the order not to shoot back, not to take revenge. And it goes on and on and on. It's earth-shaking, and people, you understand it, have complaints. Take an ideology, malcontent, and what did they accomplish? The price of housing is still going up. You have a rebellion. Read the newspapers. You might think the country is caving in. Listen to Abu Mazen, quoted Barak, quoted the TV reporter, commentator, Daniel, whatever his name is. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's unbelievable. But you see, this is a rebellion. And I want to end off. The Ramban says something here so insightful. Wow. what was Korach really upset with? He was upset that his part of the family was knocked out. Suddenly, Moshe Rabbeinu is Adon HaNeviim. These are cousins. Aaron HaKohen becomes the high priest. The Leviim, and he was part of the Leviim, are derogated to just be mere assistants of the Kohanim. He wants to overthrow Moshe. He wants to overthrow Moshe and his whole outlook. But had this happened a year earlier, the Ramban says, they would have never been able to cause a rebellion because the masses adored Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm quoting the Ramban now to Vamidbar, Tetzayin, Pasuk Aleph. V'hinei hayu ohavim oto b'nafsham. That k'nafsham, they loved Moshe like they loved their own souls. V'lo haya adam morei dal Moshe b'zman chayhu. No one would have rebelled. And if someone would have rebelled, they would have stoned him. And that's why Korach kept quiet. He understood that it was helpless. He could not succeed. But the Ramban chronologically claims, when did this rebellion take place? After the episode of the spies, the Meraglim. The Meraglim failed. The Jews were being punished. God decreed they would suffer in the desert for 40 years. The Ramban explains that after the Meraglim, God's severe punishment and Moshe's inability to undo the decree was a shock to the people. 39 years of desert wandering was their lot. The Haveti was to remain unfulfilled. The frustrated prophecies and the helplessness of their leader reduced Moshe's popularity to an all-time low ebb. They were already at the tip of the Negev, so close to fulfillment that we saw in Vamidbar that Moshe pleaded with Yitro, accompany us into the promised land. Nosim anachnu lemakom asher amar Hashem oto etein lachem. L'chayitanu, and all this disappeared, fell away, abrogated in this moment of despair and disillusionment. Korach decided to act. And next time we meet in this class, we'll pick up exactly where we left off. What does it mean to act? What were their complaints? What was the machloket? And you'll see the Rav dealing with exactly the questions we still have on our table. Feminism, he dealt with homosexuality, the rebellion against Torah, rebellion against the footprints of the sheep of the previous, earlier generation. Gentlemen, where do we go from here? Be'ezrat Hashem, tomorrow I have a surprise. Yom Ha'atzmaut has already paid up 36,000, what was it, 99,000 shekel to the IOU list. So he has committed himself, Baruch Hashem. So we have a surprise. Tomorrow, hold on, Herb. Tomorrow we go back to Messianicism, the Rebbe, before he dies and after he dies. It's a very, very basic shayur tomorrow. I have a grandson, at least one that I know is listening, because he spoke with me today about the last year, and he's very mesmerized by the whole question. What we've done today, we finished out the tshuva in Reb Menashe Klein, and we dealt with interesting matters, 30 days, 90 days, three regalim, meiniket chavero, muberet. These are all questions that come up. Reb Menashe Klein claims all these questions relate to the dignity of the woman. I elaborated on prayer. It's a work in progress. When we finish out this topic, and I think I have one full lecture to deal with the Rav, and I want to deal with a case study of Rabbi Henry Epstein of Atlanta, Georgia, and open up a very interesting volume to you. Rabbi Harry Epstein, I want to say, of Atlanta, Georgia. Be'ezrat Hashem, that will be when class starts up again. Now, let me just think for 1 second. To the outsiders sitting here, give your email numbers to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak, you give it tomorrow to Professor Tarragon, so he'll have one list. He has a list, but I just wanted to see that it's accurate, and he'll email everyone when class begins again. Okay? Freebies. Pass this back to Yitzchak. It's from Avashur Weiss. He's Malei B'Gadash. Anyone who's teaching, this is from my student, the Mishrad HaChinuch. This is on Iyav Sivan. Everything you can do with children, teach children, play with children. It's amazing what they come up with. It's kol hakavod, that's all I can say. This is on the scandals in kosher meat. It seems another doctorate is coming out, the United States. Harold Gatsworth did a doctorate. How does it talk? Fraud, corruption, and holiness. It's on a Columbia U doctorate on scandals in the 10s, 20s, 30s. This is an article, very fascinating, and it claims 40% of the meat sold in the New York area was treif until the OU was established and kashrut became real.
And talk to retrial for Rebecca.
If anyone is interested, here is a picture of Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. He's talking with Rav Shapiro. That's the eldest son of the Briska Rav. It's Mori Rebbe's first cousin. They both have exactly the same name. Don't confuse the two. One was here, one was in America. This is for Alex Glassman organizing such. I heard it was a wonderful Shabbat. Everyone said that. This is for you in your world. The difference between the Rav and Professor Avram Yoshua Heschel on the very topic we spoke about, ecumenicism. Okay? I don't know where it's from, but if you're interested, send an email and ask my comrade Arye Lieberman, where did you get it from? Here is an interesting article by the Zweibel, who is the spokesman or the vice president for Agudat Yisrael in America. I know his family. His cousin was my classmate. His family is not happy that he's in Agudat Yisrael, but everyone has freedom of choice. He compares Cardinal O'Connor to Moshe Scherer. Very interesting article. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, O'Connor, they found out was Jewish. Am I right or wrong? They found out he had a Jewish grandmother, his mother, and he was Jewish, the Jewish cardinal, among many other cardinals. So that's a very interesting article. If anyone wants a copy of the talk in Beit Shemesh, you're welcome to it. I promised Kirby I'd publicize it.
There
it is. And not the talk, the announcement of the talk. And I just want to remind everyone, there is no class next Sunday. It's Yom Yerushalayim. But I hope to have a class Monday if I get a commitment from my Talmidim tomorrow that they will come, even though they were awake all night and dancing through the old city, etc. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'dan.